should never use someone else's server to do your computing on your data. Because if you do, you lose control over your computing. But don't do it. Don't do it.
So, if the industry leaders...
To hell with them. You've got this strange idea that if they want you to do something, you have to do it. You can ignore them.
But
tell
them
to go to hell.
But I'm worried you can lead the society to that way.
Yes.
The way we
refuse to follow is by refusing to follow. Spread the word that if you use somebody else's server to do your computing, it's just as bad as using a proprietary program. Remember, most people already use proprietary software. So if most people have switched to using servers, it's not going to make things any harder for us than it was.
Yes. When their software ran on our systems, and we still could not know how to install the data.
I'm afraid I can't hear the words you are saying.
Sorry for my broken English.
Well, it's partly my trouble hearing. I have trouble recognizing sounds when the conditions are difficult. So you have an accent, and I have a hearing problem, and together it causes trouble.
I speak a little slower and louder.
That helps.
If the software companies and the hardware companies, they do the thing together and give our users a simple and low-level computer.
I don't think we have to worry about that. Computers are not going to get less powerful. There's just no point in making a less powerful computer.
If cloud calculating comes along...
Stop worrying so many years ahead. You're making a mistake even to think about the question. We don't know what's going to happen in future years. We have to worry about what we should do now.
They just want us to use a single computer that supports it.
So don't do it.
Support a browser.
Don't do it.
But the hardware, the software...
You're being a fool. You're being a fool. You don't see how foolish this idea is.
I myself will not use that. But the society will...
No, the society isn't monolithic. And people will do what they do. I don't know why you are imagining that everybody is going to get weak computers when a powerful computer doesn't cost hardly any more. It doesn't make sense. You're making a mistake. You're just imagining that people are going to do something totally irrational and pointless. Why would they?
But Google and Microsoft are trying hard to do
so. So what?
Okay.
You have this idea that somehow Google and Microsoft have a magic power, and if they tell everybody, from now on, you're going to buy these weak computers, you won't buy real computers, that everybody's going to obey. Why should they?
Oh, okay, I know. If they try to do so, I should explain their treatment.
But I don't think people are going to do this very much. And the reason is that they won't gain anything. That it's not as if those computers are going to save them any money. What's the point of putting in a weaker processor? What's the point of putting in less memory? That's not so expensive anymore. I mean, even tiny computers now, they have plenty of memory, their processors are plenty fine, they can do all sorts of things. Besides, they're actually tricking you. It's not that they run the the programs don't run in the server, they get downloaded into the browser and they run as bytecode, which is very inefficient, which means that the machine has to be even more powerful.
Their excuse is that you don't need to buy much calculating power. And if you use
that's not true. It's just the opposite. Because the computing is being done by a non-free JavaScript program on your machine, and you need a powerful CPU to run that. So it's not even true. And that if a machine is powerful enough to run that JavaScript program and give good performance, it would do an even better job if the program is written in C and is running on the same machine.
May I ask one more question, my own question? In our pre-primary school time, we spent almost 3 years to learn Microsoft software. In our junior and senior high school time, we spent almost 5 years to do so. In our university time, we still need to do so, but we have to do so because the schools only teach Microsoft softwares. I want to fight against them, but I think some other people need to get better, like you and Yi Guangnan.
Yes.
You should write to the administration of education.
I can't because they don't care. I'm not even a citizen of this country. Why would they pay any attention
because,
to me? Have to do that.
When the United States and the Soviet Union developed the atomic bomb, and I sent right to the administrator of our country.
Einstein was much more famous than I am.
So,
and any government official getting a letter from Einstein would be
developed on an old atomic bomb to maintain world peace. I think today we also need to do so.
Well, what I think we need is for students to say in class, it is against my ethical principles to use proprietary software.
But in China, it doesn't work. It simply doesn't work.
Have you tried it? You cut me off before I finished. You didn't even let me finish.
Okay.
The student has to say, it is against my principles, my conscience, to use proprietary software. So let's please work out a way that I can do the work of this class using free software and demonstrate that I understand the subject just as much as everyone else in this class. And I don't mind if it takes me more time and more effort because this is an ethical requirement and I'm willing to do more effort to do things the ethical way. If you say this in class, in the first meeting of the class, essentially you're asking the professor to do something totally reasonable because of course he wants you to master the subject of the class. He wants you to do the class work. But if you ask to do it in a different way, that's honest. And it's very hard for him to say no.
No.
Did you try it?
Don't understand China.
Maybe I don't, but did you try it?
But in China, we cannot talk about democracy, we cannot talk about freedom. You don't have
what? But I didn't say you should do that. I said that you should say, let's please work out a way that can do this with free software. Did you try it? Well, maybe, but the point is, you just responded to me by misunderstanding. Because you rejected something that was not what I said. You see, I didn't say, stand up in class and say, we need democracy. That's going to have to happen someday too, but that's a different thing. What I said was, please work out with me a way that I can master the classwork and show you I have mastered the classwork using free software. It's not a demand, it's a request, but it's a reasonable request. And that's why the professor will find it hard to say no. Well, then you have to say, I can't take this class. Goodbye.
Mr. Richard Dorman, I want to ask you a question. Is there any secrets behind Unix?
If there were secrets behind Unix, I would not know them.
Yes, but I want to discover them to make the operating system more easily to read and write.
Well, I'm afraid I'm the wrong person. You see, I have never read the source code of Unix.
Why?
Because it was a secret, and if I had got a copy and read it, that would have given AT&T an excuse to sue me. So it was my deliberate decision not to try to get a copy.
But I have bought a copy of Unix System Way.
Maybe nowadays it's not a secret. But in the 1980s, it was a secret.
But I believe that there's the secrets behind the source code and...
I don't know. I have not read... maybe today you can get the source code of Unix, but I haven't read it. So if there are any secrets, I wouldn't know. I don't know them.
So what do you read? You don't read Unix?
Sorry, are you talking about today or the 1980s?
Today. What code are you reading?
None. My work today is not programming. My work today is spreading the ideas of free software. And besides, I'm getting old, so I'm not as good at programming as I was 20 years ago.
I admire what you have done for us, for the world, for the freedom of software. And my question is, why almost everyone around us know Microsoft Windows or Microsoft Office, and they know how to use it?
Well, you know why that is. You see the facts as well as I do. Most computers run Windows. When computers are sold, they come with Windows. Schools teach Windows. Companies use Windows. This is called social inertia. So our challenge is how to overcome social inertia. And one way you do it is you just push back. Because the way social inertia works is, the easiest thing for you to do is to go with the flow. But if you go with the flow, you become part of the pressure on everybody else. So you have to refuse. But also, institutions have to refuse. That's why schools have to refuse to teach Windows. And this is the argument you make to them. You say, we have social inertia. Society is moving in a bad direction, and it has lots of inertia. So how should we behave in this situation? Obviously, we have to push back, and that way we can push society into a different path. So when the people in a school say, we have to teach Windows because the companies run Windows, you say, no, we have to refuse to teach Windows because the companies run Windows.
So, you know, OLPC and Microsoft like OLPC to use Windows to their computer.
I know, it's very sad. The OLPC project seems to be in the middle of betraying free software. So we're just going to have to fight against that. But if the result of OLPC is to teach millions of children to run Windows, it will have contributed harm to the world. Now, this is ironic because last November, I decided I would switch to an OLPC myself. And the reason I decided this is because the OLPC has a free BIOS. And it's the only portable computer with a free BIOS. So I decided I would switch to it in order to be in freedom myself. And it took a few months to arrange to actually do this. And I actually switched over in the middle of April. And that's exactly when Negroponte announced he would betray us. So now I travel around with an OLPC, which is actually down there now, and I use it as an opportunity to talk about these issues. It's still the only computer I can get, which is a portable, a laptop, and runs a free BIOS. And the reason the others don't is that the manufacturers refuse to tell us how. Have people started to write their questions? It will be much better if people have written down questions, because I can, if there are any ones, I can read them. One of the highest mentioned word, freedom, actually the definition of freedom of a different person is different. What's your definition of freedom? I told you my definition. That is, but not freedom in general, but this particular freedom, freedom for software users. So I've told you my definition. Are you forcing other people to accept your definition? Well, I can't force you to do anything. I hope some of you will agree with me. Do you have any religious belief? No, I'm an atheist. Believing too much in any sort of religion can be hazardous to your health. Even the Church of Emacs. Sometimes I think the relation between proprietary software and free software is like the relation between democracy and assembly. I don't understand that. And I just don't understand what that means. I don't see it. Proprietary software is like feudalism or warlordism. And free software is like a free society. You have been telling us not to use or accept proprietary software. Today, embedded devices such as cell phones, automotive control systems, and even toasters contain proprietary software. Even on commodity PCs, BIOSes contain proprietary code. What is your take on these systems? Well, this is a very good question. In the 1980s, there were microwave ovens that seemed like maybe they contained embedded computers. But I couldn't tell. In fact, I think I had a microwave oven, and I couldn't tell if there was a computer inside it. And I thought, so I had to think about the question, was it okay to use that microwave oven? Because it was clear if there was a computer, then the software in it must be proprietary, because the manufacturer didn't offer source code. So eventually I concluded that if you can't tell whether it's a computer as a user, then it doesn't matter. It might as well be a circuit. I didn't know whether that microwave had a computer or a circuit, so it made no difference. The reason is that that microwave, even if it had a computer inside, it didn't function as a computer for me, the user. So I decided in those cases it doesn't matter. Now, some of these embedded devices like toasters, well, it's the same thing. It doesn't matter whether it's a computer, so you can ignore it. The same thing was true for cell phones 10 years ago. Maybe they didn't have computers, maybe they did, but you couldn't install programs in them, so it didn't make any difference. But that's not true today. Today, cell phones do let users install software, so clearly they are functioning as computers for the user, and therefore the software had better be free. And I'm happy to say that a free software cell phone is being developed. The company is called OpenMoco. So that's the solution. Now, I have no cell phone. And I have never had a cell phone. 10 years ago, this was not an issue of proprietary software because people couldn't install software on cell phones. So as I explained, that was not an issue. The reason I don't have a cell phone is a different reason, which did apply 10 years ago. And that is, a cell phone is an instrument for surveillance and tracking. And I believe that is extremely evil, it's extremely dangerous. And therefore, I refuse to have a cell phone. Cell phones emit signals all the time, even if they're supposedly switched off. They emit tracking signals saying where you are. And they also can be switched on remotely to listen to you. So you can't trust them. Now, I'm happy to say that a free software cell phone partly solves that problem, because with the free software, you can turn off the emission of tracking signals. When you can program it so that when you turn off the phone, it doesn't send any signals at all. And you can make sure that it can't be switched on remotely to listen to you without informing you. So it's somewhat safer. But I don't know whether it's safe enough that I really think I should have one. So that's a question I haven't finished answering yet. So this question is about, is there some plan to move Linux to GPL version 3? Well, I'm not in a position to decide that. The developers of Linux will decide that. I hope that they will move to GPL version 3 because it's better. But I can't tell them what to do. When you develop the GNU OS, why do you first develop GCC and Emacs instead of the kernel? Well, first of all, it makes no difference logically what order you do these jobs in. If you need all of the parts, it doesn't matter which one you do first and which one you do last. So in fact, various specific practical reasons were the reason. So for the big components, I was always looking for some free program to start with in order to reduce the work that we would have to do. And I found something for GNU Emacs, I found something for GCC, although it turns out I had to throw it away in both of those cases. I had to throw away the starting point and replace it completely. But I thought I had found something to start with, so that's why I worked on them. And in the case of the kernel, we also found something to start with. We found something called Mach, which is a so-called microkernel that does the bottom part of the kernel's job. And that meant we would only have to do the top half, which means less work, which I thought meant we would finish it sooner. Well, it turns out that Mach had various problems, but in any case, that's why I, since we could do these components in any order, I kept looking for something to start with in order to reduce the work. You knew the kernel was the most important part of the operating system. No, it's not. It's one of the major essential components. But it's meaningless to say that the kernel is more important than the compiler or more important than the C library, because they're all essential. So, in fact, we started developing the GNU kernel in 1990, but it still doesn't work very well, so people use Linux. I saw you several times at LKML, the Linux kernel mailing list. The most impressive time is the debate about BitKeeper. The kernel developers seem not to agree with you. What they want is high quality but not freedom. Do you worry about that? Yes, I do. That's why I posted on the Linux kernel mailing list to denounce the use of BitKeeper. BitKeeper is a non-free program, and Torvalds used that non-free program in a very public way for the development of Linux. And that sent a very bad message to the community, and that's why I said this is bad. And they have actually censored me on that list. The list will not allow me to post. So if I want anything posted there, I have to ask someone else to do it. Do you have the determination to beat down the empire of commercial software? Well, first of all, I'm not against commercial software. I'm against proprietary software. You see, commercial software means software connected with a business. Well, I have nothing against that. I don't care whether a program is connected with a business or developed by a university or developed by volunteers. There's nothing wrong with any of those three as long as the program is free software. Then it says, if yes, how can you be so confident? That's a strange thing. These are two different questions. First of all, do I have the determination? That's one question. And am I confident? That's a different question. I can't see the future. My crystal ball is cloudy today and every day. I don't know which side is going to win because it depends on you. I have determination to do everything I can, but I can't win this battle by myself. Fortunately, some of you are already helping. If you join in, all of you, and help, if you make a campaign for free software, then we might win. Second question. As the technology develops faster and faster, maybe one day an ordinary evil hacker can master a digital nuclear bomb. That doesn't make sense to me. I mean, a nuclear bomb can't... A simulated nuclear bomb could only make a simulated explosion, and it could only simulate hurting anybody. So, I don't understand. In the presentation, you told us that freedom is no Windows, no Windows Media Player, no Amazon, no DRM. No, that's partly a misunderstanding of what I said. Certainly, you must not use Windows because it's proprietary software. And you must not use Windows Media Player because it's proprietary software and it only runs on Windows, which you shouldn't use either. Now, I didn't say no Amazon. That's the confusion. Amazon delivers proprietary software with DRM. And you mustn't use that, of course. But doing business with Amazon is a different question. Now, I recommend that people refuse to do business with Amazon because they've done some nasty things, but that's a different issue. And then it says no DRM. Well, DRM is always implemented in proprietary software. So if you want to live in freedom, you have to reject it. In China, the popularity of piracy did the same thing. No, it's not piracy. Piracy means attacking ships. If you're talking about unauthorized copying, then don't call it piracy. Piracy is a propaganda term. And if you call it piracy, you are helping our enemies. They break through the unfree license and help more people to use free software. No. You're talking about Nianfei. And I'm talking about Ziyo. So we're not talking about the same thing at all. Unauthorized copies of Windows are Nianfei, or they might be Nianfei. Maybe you have to pay a little bit to get them. But they do not respect your freedom because you don't get the source code. Microsoft still controls what they do. If you use them, you are under Microsoft's power. So what is your opinion about Chinese piracy? Well, I think attacking ships is very bad. How to balance between trust and freedom? For we programmers, we have the power to be free to control software. But for most software users, they are not good at programming, so they may not have the power to control the software. Right. So they have to rely on others. That is just what life is like, isn't it? Yes. But there's a big difference between depending on the rest of society in general and being dependent on one particular company. You know, if you have a house, and suppose the pipes break, well, you need to hire a plumber if you don't know how to fix it yourself. So you're dependent on the rest of society around you. But you're not forced to go to one particular plumber who might mistreat you. So at least you can find out who is an honest plumber and do business with him. And if he does a bad job, you can say, get out of here, I'm going to pick somebody else. So, no man is an island. None of us can be totally self-sufficient. We need the help of others. We need the help of the society around us. But that doesn't mean we have to be helplessly at the mercy of somebody with power over us. So with free software, non-programmers will have to depend on the programmers around them in society. But they are not helplessly under the power of one particular company. Proprietary software puts them helplessly under the power of the developer of that program. Someone thinks security is the opposite of freedom. Well, some people might think that. But actually, freedom, if you don't have freedom, you have no security. If you're using Windows, you have no security because Microsoft can attack you at any time. If you're using macOS, you have no security because Apple can attack you at any time. Because most people are not computer experts, they can't distinguish good codes from malicious ones. That's true. But with free software, other people are reading the source code, so at least there's a chance that they will discover any malicious feature, and then they can take it out. Now this has a deterrent effect. You see, a free software developer thinks, maybe I could put in a malicious feature. future and other people won't notice. But maybe they will notice. And if they notice, they'll take it out and everyone will know that I did something bad and I will lose my reputation forever. Is it worth the risk? And he probably decides no. The proprietary software developer says, if I put in a malicious feature, the users are stuck with it. Nobody can take it out. They can't see the source code, so they'll probably never notice. But if they do notice, they're still helpless. So the proprietary developer has power, which is a big temptation for him to abuse the users. The free software developer has no power, so he faces less temptation. If you give one man a gun and you give another man a banana, both of them could try to rob a bank. But the one with the banana probably won't try it, because he knows if he points the banana at the bank clerk is probably just going to laugh. Somebody didn't like my comparing the Chinese conquest of Tibet to the U.S. conquest of Iraq. Well, you need to find out the information that you can't find out. You know GNU/Linux is becoming more and more popular. What do you think makes it popular? Freedom, Linux kernel, big companies promotion, or whatever else? Well, I don't know. I doubt, I mean, if you're talking about the technical qualities of the software, well, that's part of it. But I don't think that the software that it is good quality is specially Linux. I mean, it might just as well be GNOME, or KDE, or OpenOffice. I don't know. I'm sure big companies' promotion has something to do with it. And freedom influences some people, but sad to say, most users of GNU/Linux have never even heard of the idea, because all they hear about is open source. Most people that talk about the system don't mention these ideas of freedom. Why is Linux becoming popular but not the GNU herd? The reason is Linux works well as a kernel and the GNU herd doesn't work very well. So that's a good reason. There were some more questions, right? Can I have them? Oh, those are all the old questions, so there are no more new ones. Am I done?